thank you very much. I complied with a desire of the organizers, at least of the majority of organizers, to present here yet another pedagogical talk about a nonlinear sigma model, deliberately in replica rather than in supersymmetry representation. So I will start with the standard Anderson model for electron impurity scattering. I will formulate quantum field theory for this in replicas. I'll try to explain why to bother. Then I'll proceed to derive the standard nonlinear sigma model. And my hope was mainly to speak about replica symmetry breaking and getting some non-perturbative results within this approach. But well, I hope at least I will be able to reach this part. So starting point is the Anderson model. This Hamiltonian, which is probably the shortest ever to write. It's as simple as it could be. It's still not solved, a part of one dimension where everything is more or less known. And it's still very much a matter of acute research. Albeit, the center of interest now is not just in this Anderson model, but also if inevitable interaction between electrons always present, also at the center of including these interactions. This is something which I will not be talking about again in this lecture, but I am stressing that this is one, if not the main reason, of using replicas. Supersymmetry is great for this model. There is no reasonable way whatsoever to generalize the supersymmetry approach if the interaction between electrons is present. Well, of course, it's quite enough to consider a model like this. So epsilon I is a random function, so it's a random energy of electrons sitting at some lattice node. This function, just hopping to next neighbors, can be chosen constant because adding here any randomness, provided that we are still sticking to next neighbor hopping, doesn't change the universality class. It will be totally different if I took this guy constant and take this guy random. Then it will be a different universality class. I will not be talking about this today. So that's the model which is considered. And also it's equivalent in the continuous limit to just very simple one particle Hamiltonian, where U is a random potential, which I would assume Gaussian, and I would assume that this is moreover white noise Gaussian potential. Neither of these assumptions matter. This again would be the same universality class if I allow both deviations from Gaussian and any sort of colored noise here. So that's the starting point. We are interested in Green's functions of this Hamiltonian and, of course, their combinations. So because it's a one-particle model, I can build only one-particle Green's function, but because it's random, the average of product is not equal to product of average, therefore we will have non-trivial qualities associated to product of Green's function. So now I hope that everybody would be happy if I start immediately with functional integral for this. But here, I really want to ask this. So I write, so this is Green's function at energy epsilon at point RR prime. And I write it as product like that to the power R prime, thank you. Exponent IS, integration over psi bar and psi, where S is integral of psi bar epsilon minus H psi. Yes, that's something about which already Kostya Ifetov told a week ago. I want this to be always convergent. So what I do, I have this epsilon as epsilon plus minus. I put here epsilon plus minus as energy plus or minus I delta. Delta is infinitesimal. I put here probably plus or minus in front of I call this guy S plus minus. And then with this choice, I've got convergence no matter what is this random potential. And so it's possible to show how to go from here to here for about, I would say, 5 minutes with given sort of an actual definition of what is psi integral. But if people are happy, I probably would better go forward. I didn't say anything about symmetry up to now. I will. If this is a reasonable starting point, I'll proceed from here. But let me stress a few things, what I want to do and why. So this is a disorder which is characterized by some scale. So if I got here just one special axis, I would say that it's sort of random potential is somehow fluctuating with a scale of which I call h bar over tau. Tau is a mean free time between scattering of electrons from these impurities. Electrons have energy epsilon Fermi, which is much higher than this h over tau, which means that I want to consider only the weak disorder case. So I have here, therefore, epsilon Fermi, which is much bigger than characteristic disorder energy. And this I want to be much bigger than so-called level spacing, typical distance between the levels, which is I already think of h bar as being equal to 1. I don't want to be careful about this. So this is a typical distance between energy levels in the box of finite volume. And this is the minimal energy here. It's very small. I could reformulate this in terms of length. So lambda Fermi here is the smallest length in the system. L is the mean free path, which is just Fermi velocity times this tau, which is much bigger than lambda Fermi. This is weak disorder condition. And this L is much smaller than the system size. This is diffusive condition. So that's electron has enough space to diffuse. This is very relevant, weak disorder. This is diffusive region, not very relevant. This condition can be negated, and more complicated so-called ballistic sigma model could be derived. Odara Gam, who is present here, is one of the authors of this ballistic sigma model. This is mainly for simplicity. Diffusive sigma model is much easier than ballistic. So why do I need sigma model? The reason is that I won't fully exploit this inequality. Mean free path is much bigger than lambda Fermi. It's smooth. It's a crossover. A crossover, yes. A diffusive sigma model is just limit of ballistic sigma model for large length. The reason is that when I just think about wave functions of fermions in this system, they are hugely oscillating at region of lambda Fermi. I want to smooth this out, and I want to come up with an infrared theory which is smooth for large distance. That's the reason of going from this representation to something else. So I... yes? Yes. I just right now I want to say precisely about this, because this is one particle system. It of course doesn't matter that I use bosonic or fermionic representation as long as I fix energy, because I don't have anything but elastic scattering. Energy remains fixed, and therefore it can be used either fermionic or bosonic. Last week, Kostya introduced here Grassmann algebra and a bit of Grassmann analysis to tell you how to deal with fermions. I can say that actually it can be formulated very simple. This partition function here, in case of bosons, can be written just as determinant of epsilon plus minus h minus 1. And it's very easy to show this from this expression. And all we need to know about fermions.
If the whole determinant h is the minus 1 power, it's not the determinant of either.
Sure. It's a quadratic model, doesn't matter.
Well,
it's a quadratic model, I always can think about determinant as being diagonal, then it's just a product of this, therefore really I don't want to specify this right now. Do you take it? Okay, so just because it's a quadratic model, many things here are very simple. To begin before I ever achieve a disorder, of course. So this is very easy to do for bosons, and all we need to know about fermions, they do everything like bosons. So fermions do it like bosons, but upside down. All you need to know is that you will delete this minus one if you want to write this for fermions. So if I write here fermion boson, it will be plus or minus one. Plus for fermion, minus for boson. But then this Z will be eventually canceling whatever I calculate, so it really doesn't matter. Of course, I also need to remember that for fermions, these fields are anti-commuting. Again, psi are fields, not operators. For bosons, they're just normal fields. For fermions, they're anti-commuting fields, which means the square of each of them is equal to zero. Which means that I need to be careful if I write something like, for example, BCS interaction, which is local, but I will not be going into this. So that's my starting point. And let me just now do what already John Cardi demonstrated here about a week ago, how do I write it with the help of replicas. I want to average this over this disorder U. One over Z here prevents me from making this averaging a simple functional integral. In supersymmetric method, which Kostya talked about last week, this property of fermions and bosons was used to cancel this Z and making averaging possible. I will stick either to only fermions or to only bosons. I will prefer only fermions. Then I need to get rid of this Z, and I do it by writing this model replicated. It will be Zn. Integral, okay, let me forget about plus minus sign. I write everything for G plus, unless I specify otherwise. I will write here psi 1 r psi 1 r prime exponent I. Here I would have capital psi times epsilon minus h capital psi integral over ddr, where capital psi is just psi 1 psi m. Capital is just with a leg underneath. It's replicated, and then this zn, which is a partition function calculated with this s, is simply z1 to the power m. It's a bit asymmetric, which I don't particularly like, but psi 1 is as good as psi 2, psi 2, and so on. So I can change this to product of capital size. Then I take it n times, therefore I need to divide this by n. And then it will be exactly the same expression, but already symmetrized for Green's function. And now, because of this property, I see that this is go to 1 as n equals to 0. That's the basis of replica trick. As Werner Kao told me, when it works once, it's a trick. When it works twice, it's a method. So I can call it the replica method, because it actually worked much more than twice. When we are talking about the Pythagorean approach, it works, of course, always. There is no problem with perturbation theory. Non-perturbatively, it's surprising how many correct results have been extracted from replica method. A good example of failure is, of course, speeding horses, as everybody knows, but that's a different story. It's not just using replicas. It's using a lot of physical assumptions, which probably went astray. Here, okay, that's my only prerogative to do. Or I actually can say it in a different way. I always want to calculate free energy, which is, of course, log Z. And I need to make average over disorder. This is easy. This is I don't know what. So instead, I average over disorder Zn, which is exponent of log Z to the power n. If I add here minus 1 and take n to 0, this is, of course, n log Z. So again, I divide it by n and take this average. So I can get either Green's function or free energy just by using this replica trick. It is a trick, very easy trick, but it works. Okay, so yes, and again, as I told, Green's function, of course, we've got only one particle, but when we're averaging, one or two Green's functions are very different stories, and I can have as many of them as I want. The statement is that averaging one Green's function is not interesting. It doesn't contain any physical information. It's much better to average product of two, and moreover, it always will be necessary to take product of G plus and G minus. So I want to average actually product of G plus, G minus. These brackets always will mean, almost always, will mean averaging over disorder. And now when I know that this Zn in the end of the day is the same as 1, I can of course make averaging over disorder separately here and there. So I average numerator and denominator, and then that's straightforward. So if I just here use that UR prime is Gaussian, so there is only pair correlator, and moreover it's white noise, then of course integration with distribution of U is straightforward, it's Gaussian, and instead of having here the term in this H, which is U psi psi, I integrate and I got a quartic term. So then I can write it probably I, okay, to average I need this guy, I will remember this, but I will be dealing this Z. So I average Z, which is Z plus, Z minus. So a product of one which comes with plus, one which comes with minus, each replicated. And of course, I want log of this. So that's what I build. As I said, average of Z to the power n, or just Zn, is trivial, and taking log means just taking this limit. I see immediately that I've got S after averaging, which can be written like this. Again, I got integral dr psi epsilon minus H naught psi, and I would have after averaging something which will be proportional to gamma squared and times quotient term. Let me just now to rename it. I rename it in such a way, 1, 4, pi, nu, tau, psi, dot, psi, squared. So I call here gamma identically 1 over 2 pi, nu, tau. Extra 1/2 came out of integration. So nu is density of states. It's something which doesn't feel disorder, therefore it's a constant. And I actually parameterized this guy by tau, which would happen to be electrons in free time for scattering, as I told from the very beginning. Therefore, this is the action which we've got.
I have a question. I think it's slightly unrelated, but how do you get that tau
to mean
feedback? I
mean, I never... let's say that this is an educated guess. I could keep here gamma till the very end, then I would eventually arrive to a combination which is tau. I will show you it. I just don't want to keep this gamma because it will be more of a problem. And at that stage, when I know what I'm calculating, I declare that 2 pi nu gamma actually is tau. Instead of doing this at the end, I'm doing this from the very beginning. That's the only story. Okay, so when I've got this, I've got here a quartic term, which is stronger, which contains stronger oscillating terms, which I want to get rid of. Here? No, it's S. Of course, whenever I write integral, it will be exponent plus minus IS. Right, so if you want, I can write IS as I times this guy.
Yeah.
No, it's still all okay with this guy because it was fermionic. I use that the sign is to be changed or whatever. Okay. So anyway, I don't need to be very careful about this sign right now. This guy I can write as minus 1, 4 pi nu tau trace of q dot q, okay. Where q identically equal psi cross psi. I put here cross to stress that I exchange matrix row and matrix column by place. If I have psi bar psi, it's just a number. If I have psi psi bar, it's a matrix. So and here I need to put plus sign because in order to write down something like this, I need to take one psi from front to the end. It anticommutes three times when it's fermion, so the sign is different. And now I introduce matrix Q capital, which has the same symmetry. So Q capital is like Q in terms of symmetry, in terms of symmetries. It's probably a good time to explore the symmetries, but it will take a while. So all I want to say that because each of these guys is a vector of length 2n, because I've got here product of z plus and z minus. N components came with plus sign, n components this plus label, and then components with minus label. Then this Q is 2n by 2n matrix, 2n by 2n Hermitian matrix. And because it's Hermitian, I now can use Gaussian integral or Gaussian decoupling. I write exponent minus trace q squared, omitting all three factors for a moment, as integral exponent minus trace q squared plus 2 q small q capital dq divided by exponent minus trace q squared dq. Sorry?
What
I did. I did. I think I screwed I, yes. That was Pierre's question. But you understand that I can get it equally easy, either with plus or with minus. Yeah, here you are right, it's plus. When I see how I complete the square, it is plus. Still, I need I somewhere. If you forgive me, I can restore it, but it's there. So that's of course, identical, because Q is Hermitian. Measure integration is defined straightforwardly. It's just integral over all independent components. And after this, I got rid of this Q small term. Oh, still, I need here minus to cancel this guy, but okay, anyway. I got rid of this small q squared term, and I come up with action which would have a structure like this. It's I s naught, which still is the same, and then there is trace of this q small q capital. If I now restore correctly all which is there, it will be minus integral trace. I just recall that q small is this guy, so it's trace psi q psi, and a correct refactor here is 1 over 2 tau. So S naught, of course, is this part of action which contains H naught. Yes, it's this guy is S naught. So I've got an action which is fully quadratic in psi, therefore I integrate over psi. So the last is integrate and here I just remember that these are fermions, so I do everything upside down. So when I integrate fermionic quadratic action, I will get determinant of the matrix with power plus. So it gives me determinant of A, which is of course exponent of log determinant, which is exponent of trace log A. That's how I do fermionic integral, which allows me to arrive to the action now, which I restore all factors here. Here I omitted factors. Now I restore them, and my action becomes integral dr trace minus, actually it's es, it's is, and because it's no longer oscillating, it would be a good idea to rename it by free energy, because eventually I've got Euclidean Gaussian integral, therefore I call it f. So it's here minus pi nu over 8 tau q squared plus minus I over 2 log of minus psi plus omega lambda over 2 plus I over 2 tau q. So that's the result of formal integration over all variables. It's formally exact, and here is the biggest cheating I do during this tutorial, because I have written here 1/2, and if any diligent student try to do this, he or she will not get this half. The point is that I could perform this integration exactly, but I need to be very careful and remember what are my aims. My aims is to find a field Q capital which only slow changes in real space. To do this, I need to be a bit more careful when I define this matrix Q small. And I need to be more careful in separating slow motion from fast motion. If I do this, I will change a bit symmetry of my Q and I will have here a factor of 1 half. But it will be entirely impossible to tell about this in real time. All I just want to do is to stress that here there is a caveat. And I need to be careful when I derive this. Yes?
I could do all this for any value of n, the number of replicates, right?
Yes.
So in principle, I could create a complex from an interaction fermion using this formula.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you've got your, but again.
Without randomness,
Of course. If I got just of interacting fermions,
yeah.
The fermions are given by this n vector, I can do this.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And yes, and moreover, it's being done for in the same case of disorder interaction. When we consider Anderson model of this interaction, we do this. Or quite recently, it was done by Alenier and Yefetov precisely for the case you're talking about.
But my point is that if I was just looking at the scattering of fermions, then this would be a crazy way to
work. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because you see, I have already stuck here to energy representation.
Yeah.
It's very good when I've got only elastic interaction, right?
Yeah.
If it is not the case, it's a crazy way of doing this. I need to have here full-time representation, to have d tau instead of epsilon. I still can do this, but I only win. I only win if I have slow excitations in this fermionic system, which somehow, if in this fermionic system excitations with wavelengths, with scale much bigger than wavelengths prevail. In general, that's not the case. So therefore, in general, it's a crazy way of doing things.
But there's another craziness in this. This Q is called the angular replicate. In the graphing system, you would decouple to the density, of course. It will be a scalar-field coupled to density. This naturally will be coupling interaction.
Yes. Oh yes. But you still can do this. You don't need, of course, you don't need to do this stuff. Oh yes. I know this. That's actually what one can call functional optimization in Latin general liquid or whatever. It's quite possible to do. But of course, going to Q matrix in that case would be totally crazy because there is no justification for this. Here, I always have in mind this set of inequalities. Without the first one, all I'm doing is irrelevant. I told you that the main reason for going to replicas is to be able to generalize for interaction. But there is a secondary reason which is quite interesting, which just refers to what you're saying. I'm deriving this theory. When I derive it, I will look how it behaves at integer n and how it behaves at n equals 0. It reveals quite a few interesting things for both limits. Okay, so now that's all I've got here. Again, let's say that in some way it could be formally exact but totally useless because trace log, it's not something which I can deal with. Therefore, I need to expand trace log and the starting point for this is saddle point approximation. So I go through saddle point. Therefore, I vary my action with respect to Q. It's, of course, a very easy procedure, and it immediately gives me minus I pi nu Q by dQ is some green function taken at the same point, and this green function is actually 1 minus xi plus omega lambda over 2.
So the large branches
of the I will talk about this. Just give me a moment. Yeah, it's the next slide. I just do several points and then I compare what will come out and what will be thrown away. Okay? So I've got just, okay, this expression plus I over 2 tau Q R. So here I need to explain a few things. This lambda which appeared already there has a very simple origin. When I want to consider this product of two Green's function, I don't want to take them at the same energy. I prefer to have epsilon, say, plus omega over 2, epsilon minus omega over 2. To allow some dynamics, I consider them at different energies. Then when I write here Z, I also assume that this is epsilon plus omega over 2 and epsilon minus omega over 2. Because one comes from plus, one comes from minus, they will be this opposite sign. And this matrix lambda here reflects this. Lambda will be just a unit matrix of size n minus unit matrix of size n, 0, 0. Psi, which you introduce here, is simply p squared over 2m minus epsilon Fermi. And practically always, it's very useful to linearize. I can write it approximate. I can linearize because my energy is rather large. I'm sitting very far from sort of parabolicity in my spectrum. So I can always write it as V Fermi times n times gradient, where n is just some unit vector, gradient is gradient, that's it. So I've got this equation. So this is this Green's function taken in the same point as it comes when I try to find saddle point, which means that in P representation, it's just integral of this Green's function. And I can do it relatively straightforward. I just see that from here, it's a matrix expression. It's not very easy to deal with matrix expression, but at least at omega equals 0, at omega equals 0, I have here 1 over minus I xi plus I over 2 tau q. I write as actually plus I over 2 tau q. I always assume that this xi is multiplied by unit matrix. And here I've got psi squared plus 1 over 4 tau squared q squared. Q is sitting in the denominator. Now I see that if I limit myself to the manifold where q squared equals 1, my equation could be immediately solved, because this becomes at omega equals 0. It becomes integral over dp. Here I have I over 2 tau q.
So you're completing the square
and I multiply it by complex
xi
here. Okay, it was here, but it disappeared from integral, because I take integral over all momenta in pole approximation, right? Therefore, it's linear in xi. Denominator is squared. Forget about it. Are you happy with this? It's actually not that not rigorous that it may seem. So I have here 4 tau squared q squared. Therefore, immediately, q squared equals 1 gives solution. And that's how I actually manipulated with all coefficients before that. Integral over dp here, as usual, I write as nu integral d xi. I use this equation, and nu is density of states, dOS at epsilon Fermi. I assume that dispersion relation is not crazy, and that's all I need. It's not necessary that it's parabolic. All is necessary that energy dependence on momenta is not very fast near Fermi energy. Then what I imply here, that this psi I have written as p minus p naught times p plus p naught divided by 2m. P plus p naught is approximately 2p naught. So I've got here that v Fermi. And when I write integral over this, I just count, I see that nothing depends on angle. I perform angle integration, and I find that what appears in front of this is just density of states. Therefore, after I do all this, I see that q squared equals 1 is exactly a solution of this saddle point equation at epsilon at omega equals 0. So I found a huge solution in a class of matrices which are R-independent and which is hugely degenerate. The question may be whether other solutions exist. As usual, it's nonlinear matrix equation, who knows. But this solution is there, and I intend to use it. So q squared equals 1 is hugely degenerate, because it's a 2n by 2n matrix, which is equal 1. And I can rewrite q squared equal 1 as q equals u dagger lambda u. Lambda is the same matrix as here, and u is the unitary matrix which lives in the same space as this matrix Q. Then it's easy to check that this condition is immediately fulfilled in this representation. Another property which is also take place here is that trace Q equals to 0. So that's my formal solution. Why have I chosen here lambda? Doesn't matter. In reality, I could rotate around any special dependent matrix which has this property, q squared equal 1, and I will cover the entire manifold. And this manifold is rather huge. It's very degenerate, but one can see that if you commute this lambda, I will not get anything new. If you commute lambda, you meet u dagger, I've got the same lambda. So I need to factorize what I've got by the class of matrices which commute this lambda, which gives me eventually that this means that q belongs to some manifold which is described by symmetry group, whatever is symmetry group of q, of the size 2n. 2n by 2n is entire dimensionality of matrix Q, but I need to factorize it by manifold, which is a diagonal product of the same matrix with half dimensionality, because all these matrices will be commuting with matrix lambda. I just recall you that lambda is 1n 0, 0 minus 1n, and if I write here any matrix which has structure Sn 0, 0, okay, I better use u1, 0, 0, u2, it will be commuting with this matrix. And because this commuting matrices don't give me anything new, I need to factorize by them. That's how I come to this representation of Q. And of course, it can be now done explicitly. I can write from here, I'm sorry going backwards, but here, so I can write that U becomes more narrow matrix, which I called T. T belongs to this representation, and T can be written as exponent of a matrix like that. This is N, 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 N. So T, then T Hermitian conjugate is minus sign, 0, 0. One can, of course, realize that this is simply Lie algebra, which corresponds to the group Sn, but that doesn't matter. One doesn't need to know this in order to write this representation. And now we are done. We have built up the model, which is fully defined. The only thing to stress, why have I chosen here lambda instead of any other matrix? just because lambda was already sitting here when omega not equal to zero. Therefore, when omega not equal to zero, this lambda, if I substitute instead of q, still commutes this entire denominator. I can still do this trick. And I see that with accuracy up to a small correction, this omega, lambda is still a solution. Therefore, it's a good starting point, but it's not the only one. Here it's time to stress that if I choose instead, choose any lambda p, lambda with index p, index probably I will still have time to explain, that obeys q lambda p commutator equals zero. That's all I need. I need that matrix, that lambda comma lambda p commutator equals zero. I knew that when I choose q equals lambda p, it still commutes with this lambda, and this again a hugely degenerate family. And here is the possibility for replica symmetry breaking. Just saying this in advance, but I don't need only to choose matrix which contains the same signature between g plus and g minus functions as originally. I can choose any commuting matrix, and one can see immediately that any matrix which made from 1 and minus 1 in arbitrary order, but will be commuting with matrix lambda. Therefore, any will give me a solution. Now I come back to Ilya's question, what is justify this several point solution? Now when I got q squared equals 1, I look back to my action. If q squared equals 1, then this term is just a constant, which I can throw away. In the replica limit, it's even a zero constant, but it doesn't matter. It's a constant. Therefore, if I want to take into account q, which do not obey this condition, this q will give me some energy cost here, which I don't pay when q squared equals 1. So this is the next point. Let me now delete left-hand side and go here. So the next point, settle point justification. It doesn't correspond to the spirit of replica method, because I don't know how to do computation when n equals to zero. I can put n equals to zero only in my final expressions. It will be no sense if I do it right here, because what is
this I understand, but usually in
replica,
you're supposed to bring everything to z to let's say integer m, and then say,
absolutely, that's
some approximation, and my question is, where
is the
approximation?
Yes, absolutely. As I told, even better, because when n is integer, this trace q squared is some constant which I throw away. When n is zero, it's just a zero constant. I have nothing to throw away. And when I substitute q squared, which is not zero, what I would pay? Q squared not equal 1, sorry, I would pay this cost, nu over tau times l to the power d, because I will make integral. Nu l to the power d is precisely my level spacing. So that's a very small parameter.
On the music
and the goal. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I don't derive the ballistic model. Okay. Pardon me. I told you that for simplicity, I do derive only diffusive model. That's it. Absolutely. It was a stress from the very beginning. Ballistic model, I cannot derive like that. And you know this. Yes? Yes?
So what
This I don't know, because second derivative, of course, is trivial on this manifold. This expression appears to be linear in Q, and that's it. I don't actually... It's too complicated manifold in order to be able to tell this in advance, because what I want to say is actually that the main deviation from this manifold is not due to this. For this, I pay big energetic cost, and therefore this throw away. And I'm left with Q squared equal 1, but allow Q of R. So I have derived this assumption that Q is just a constant matrix. That's how I got this several-point solution. Now I want to keep to this manifold where Q squared is still equal 1, but allow R dependence, which actually now finally tells me what I need to do. I've got here this expression, this trace logarithm, and Q squared. Q squared is thrown away, and trace logarithm, I need to expand in slow, not small, but slow deviations from this saddle point. And also this expand in terms of omega. Yeah, this expansion, to show how it works, it half a page, but probably I will not be doing this because it's actually straightforward. It's sitting on the case, on the fact that this psi is already proportional to gradient. If I do here a certain similarity transformation, I can probably write down what I will have here after similarity transformation. If I allow this, my trace log goes to, again, minus 1/2, trace log, and here I would have minus xi plus I over 2 tau lambda minus u commutator psi u dagger plus omega over 2 u lambda u dagger. And all I need to know is that this guy is g naught minus 1, where g is this Green function which I use there. Therefore, if I take it out of log, it's a constant, I don't care about this. All I need is to expand this and that term to the first non-vanishing order. This is clear. It breaks down my symmetry. I will get constant term proportional to omega. This, because xi is proportional to gradient, is expansion in gradients. Of course, it couldn't be term which is proportional to the first power of gradient because of angular symmetry. Therefore, I will have second power of gradient. Therefore, expand. This becomes expansion parameters. And when I do expand, I will have second power of gradient, and first power is this matrix lambda. So I will arrive at F equals integral ddr pi nu d over 8 gradient q squared plus I pi nu over 4 lambda q. Here I need to put trace. And this is precisely nonlinear sigma model, which I wanted to derive. So, yeah, it's a half of my project, as usual, which took 50 minutes. But that's where I arrive at. And this is nonlinear theory because of this condition. Q squared equals 1. I can calculate any observable. Yeah. Thank you. Omega is here. And in general, it's of course a field theory which contains two parameters. one parameter which is associated with diffusion coefficient. Diffusion coefficient here is V Fermi squared tau divided by D, dimensionality. Another parameter is omega. And here is a huge difference between n equal 0 and n non-equal 0. For n non-equal 0, both parameters are pretty much alive. I can write RG equations for this sigma model, and it will be a system of two RG equations. One which describes rigidity associated with this gradient Q squared, and the other which describes external field associated with this omega lambda Q. However, in the replica limit, this guy is dead. It's very easy to check that in the easiest approximation, when I forget about Q squared equal 1, I just think about this as a linear expression. Of course, I can always derive it. Then, of course, it's just a quadratic action. Okay, it will be quadratic in this term also, in the lowest approximation. Then the propagator here is 1 over dq squared minus I omega. It's a simply diffusion propagator. So propagator or zero Green's function here gives me diffusion. 1 over dq squared minus I omega, diffusion. Of course, in many statistical models, I will start with diffusion propagator from the very beginning. Here, I spent all this time just to come up with this. But it's still very different from standard statistical model, because all corrections to this guy behave differently. But exactly like in any statistical model, I've got the probability conservation. Therefore, if I consider that this guy is a probability distribution, I can make a Fourier transform into R and T, and this will be probability distribution that I've got my random walker at point R at moment T when it starts from 0 at 0. If I want to get it anywhere, I need just to integrate it over all R. Integrating over all R means I put here Q to 0. Therefore, if Q equals 0, it must be somewhere. And this guy must remain 1 over minus I omega, which forbids any sort of renormalization of this guy. And indeed, when we try to do any RG in reality, we will see that all corrections to this guy are proportional to m, therefore they will die away. Therefore, one might ask the first question, how on earth I use the theory for integer n, which has basic properties quite different from my replica limit, and still believe in the replica limit? This question we are happy to leave for mathematicians to decide, because there is no answer for this. It works. Well, it's not the worst example. I can give you a very long list of quite fantastic properties of nonlinear sigma model which are held in the replica limit, and sometimes there are absolutely unbelievable mechanisms of generating a different behavior in the replica limit as compared to any integer n. For example, this theory contains infinite number of relevant operators. I have stopped derivation on the first non-vanishing terms, but I can go further, and I may need to ask myself whether my corrections are relevant or not. And in spite of the fact that they have a small bare value, they are relevant. And sometimes they are relevant when we know from any integer n theory that they cannot be. And when we calculate appropriate critical dimensions, we will see that these critical dimensions will be zero or positive for any integer n, and becomes negative either in replica n equals zero limit or for non-integer n. So there are a lot of interesting properties of this model which on the face of it prevents us from taking a replica limit. Still we do this with impunity, and no problem that it works for perturbative limit, but it's quite an interesting feature that it gives me a lot of results in non-perturbative limit. Yeah?
One dimension you have locally traced, right?
Yes.
So you can plug from
No, I can't describe localization. There is here weak disorder approximation. Of course, in 1D, I would have localization on any disorder. But then at 1D, RG doesn't work. And this is the only way I can deal with this theory. I build up normalization group equations. Critical dimensionality here is D equal 2. I can do probably 2 plus epsilon expansion, albeit it's very bad. I can't do 2 minus epsilon expansion, so I can't have anything directly for 1D. I can though, or actually not, I, if better than Larkin, could do this for quasi one-dimensional system. If there is quasi one-dimensional system, many channels, so that localization length is much bigger than mean 3 path, for one channel they are the same, this accuracy factor of 2. Then this theory can be built and it gives all results which are now known to be correct were also obtained from a very different transfer matrix approach of DMPK equations. But this does not directly work for one for D equal 1. So I am left with the last point in my program. It's precisely 1 hour since I started. I still can only hint what's if you allow me 5 more minutes, I can show you what tricks physicists do to allow for replica symmetry breaking in this model. So let me now consider a very simple observable. I want to consider correlations between energy levels. It's precisely the stuff which Kostya Efetov did exactly a week ago, for those of you who were there. So I want to consider mu of epsilon plus omega, average over disorder. I put double brackets, I don't put double brackets, I just subtract of here nu squared and divide by nu squared. This is the quantity to consider to illustrate replica symmetry breaking. So density of space, of course, can be simply written as Green's function. Therefore, it's a product of Green's function. Therefore, it has a structure which I was talking about, and I can represent it with the help of my sigma model. And so let me just tell you that this is proportional to 1 over n squared times second derivative of log z. And this log z was what I have built up. So that's the quantity which I can calculate when I know z. Now I want to do this only in universal limit, which is zero-dimensional limit. When my system is relatively small, which means that I want to consider this energy omega, by which two guys are different, to be not very large. So this omega is smaller than d over l squared, which is called Thouless energy. And this allows me just to forget about gradient term in this model. And then, as well as it was in the Efetov case, I just got a simple matrix integral to calculate. It's no longer field theory. It's just a matrix integral, albeit quite involved. This integral was calculated first time in 82 by Zernbauer and Verbaschott, and they have shown that the result is manifestly different from what one expects to get. So it was in a paper which was called Critique of Replica Trick to show that replica trick doesn't work. However, it does, but in a much more sophisticated way, which became obvious only 10 years after. It's this property which I need to take into account. There is not only one lambda which gives me solution to the saddle point equation, but there are many of them. So what I use here is There are many solutions to saddle point equation, many solutions parameterized by lambda p, which is 1 m minus p minus 1 p minus 1 p 1. Okay, here is plus, here is minus. So in this is again 2n by 2n matrix. All the rest is zero. Instead of having here 1 and here minus 1, I redistributed minus 1s along the entire matrix. It's as good solution as original one. And in a sense, it doesn't break any symmetry. It just allows me to exploit the symmetry directly. Then I can write a formal expression for this Z, which will be not just one integral which I need to calculate. It will be sum of integral, sum over all this P of integrals over dqp of exponent. Here will be minus omega over 2 trace lambda P qp. So that's the point of this calculation. And here I want to invite you to see how atrocious it is. It's each point lambda p represents the entire manifold as good as lambda by itself. But instead of considering just one of these contributions, I consider the sum of all of them. These sum coefficients here, which correspond to the generals of each universality class. And then I use saddle point approximation for each of them. Of course, if I think of my manifold as some sort of hypersphere, I found a saddle point, I expand in the vicinity of saddle point. Now I've got very many saddle points, I expand in the vicinity of each of them. If there is very small overlap between the areas of this expansion which contribute, I might be right. That's the idea of this trick. Instead of considering just one exact representation, I consider the sum of many, and I expand around many. And then, of course, it can only be true when omega is large enough. I cannot go to limit of very small omega, because then there is no gap when I expand in each around each saddle point, and then this is definitely dead from the very beginning. Therefore, but I still can hope that it works for large omega. And if I do all the calculation, here goes...
You're raising the condition that omega is small.
No, omega...
Omega is smaller than E.
Yeah, so I now work on the condition that omega is much smaller than this EC, which is D over L squared, but much bigger than delta. Okay, so I cannot know what happens when omega is smaller than level spacing. But it appears that better write it in this way, it's precisely omega over delta, which is my expansion parameter. So it's this guy which must be large. Then my result will be that this Zn becomes sum over this p from 0 to m. Let me not write this function, I just say that this is some function which depends on n and p. This is still all okay, provided that omega is large. Then I note that f n p equals 0 for integer n when n is bigger than p, which is nice, an exact property. When I do this, just because it's zero anyway, so who tells me anything bad if I do this? And then, because n is no longer sitting there, I can take n to zero limit, which produces for me here two terms, plus term plus n squared second term plus o to the n to the power 4. Because I need to get expression which is 1 over n squared, I neglect all higher terms of expansion, they will disappear in replical image. I take n to 0 eventually. And Kwon-Leavitt I calculate is 1 over n squared, second derivative of this z. That is why I keep only two terms for the unitary case. And then when I do all this procedure, I neglect all small terms, I will come to the result, which is minus sine squared omega over omega squared, which is exact. Of course, just a second, this result is absolutely non-perturbative. Remember, my parameter is, my expansion parameter is that omega is, which is essentially is 1 over omega, and I've got sine of omega. This is, of course, a nice coincidence because this is true only for the unitary case. If I go to two others, I didn't tell you there are symmetries there, but everybody knows that there are three symmetries, and for one of them I got exact result. For two others, I've got correct asymptotics, which is also non-perturbative, in a sense that it contains oscillating terms of inverse of small parameter. Therefore, it works, but of course, you can understand why this is atrocious, right? It's zero only for integer m. If I go away half step from integer axis, it's not the case. And of course, I cannot prove behavior of this guy for very large m. So I don't know whether accumulation point at infinity exists. Actually, it has been proved for unitary case. It does exist. So mathematicians now know why this is not a coincidence, but what it should be the case. But it's still not shown for any other symmetry. My results are also correct. So you see, in a sense, replica method works well beyond of reasonable hope. I can now almost exactly quote Martin Sonnenbauer in his second critique of replica trick, where he actually explained why it works. He told something like that, that when mathematicians hear what physicists do, and the rigor of their derivation, they would throw up their hands in despair. But physicists are much intrigued and of course want to go further. A good question for mathematicians is to try to answer why it works when it does, and is there any conditions for us to know in advance whether we can hope to get a correct answer or whether we are there just by a game of chance. Okay, thank you.
In the last case, you could expect the instantons,
and probably highly non-perturbative contribution out of that. Not here. Instantons, of course, do exist in the sigma model, and do give very non-perturbative contributions, but not in this limit. I know what you mean. Whether I have solutions which go from one sector to another, whatever. Not in this simple case, but this was exploited very much by Kamenev with many collaborations, just in what situation instanton solutions are important. Here, of course, you can expect that they will not be, because we already got an exact answer. But you're absolutely right. There are simple instantons just in omega space, which give you a transition from one sector to another, which may be important in some other cases, albeit not here. Their contribution is exponentially small. The point is that I told you that I got here exact result, but actually it's a lie because I also got these corrections. But it's not present in exact result. So this correction which comes from this approximation should be cancelled by something else. Similarly, instantaneous contribution here give exponentially small corrections.
But this is always the case.
Sure, but the point is that they don't exist here. They should be cancelled by something else, which is of course beyond our control. We can't do this in this approximation. Yes, they should not be here because I know this result exactly. It's a reverse engineering, right? But of course, because here I've got a result which is quite large, I by the way, had here exponentially small corrections as well. directly from this saddle point contribution. Whether they would or whether they would not cancel infotonic contribution, nobody tried to check, because who cares? It's a model where we know everything about the answers. It's in a sense a firing range. You try this model just to fire your rifle and to see whether it works. If it doesn't work here, you would hardly expect it to work in more complicated cases. But quite a considerable list of more complicated cases was actually being dealt with by this sort of method. Mostly with, in a semi-interaction case of quantum dots, where there is interaction in a shape of charging energy, but it's a simple interaction because it's a mean field interaction. So there, this method works and gives some trivial results.